Hello, everyone. I'm Caleb. You all know Nick and Zach for the second week in a row looks way different than what you're used to. This is Dan DeRogers. He's our guest for the podcast. Zach will be back hopefully next week. You're going through some transition right now. Dan.
Good transition.
Yes. Dan, we've known for a long time. I think as long as Nick and I have known each other. I've technically known Dan a little bit longer.
That's true.
By a bit.
Take that, Nick.
But Dan,
you know, I don't know, because I went to prior to the end of the school year. Previously, when is general counsel? Because I did stop by the school to look at it before the year we started.
A competition to who's known me longer?
It would have been in May. We'll do the math out later.
Yeah, just want to do this live.
No, but Dan was our college professor back when we were attending Valley Forge Christian College, now University of Valley Forge, specifically all things digital media and video production and everything. Taught us so much of what we know, both technically and philosophically. And always a pleasure to have you on, Dan. Now, though. You are serving as the executive pastor at Connection Church in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, where I attended when I was back in Pennsylvania. But you've had a number of positions. You've operated as a missionary, as a media pastor, right? Obviously, as a college professor. You've been sort of all over the place.
And a whole host of side hustles to get me through the
yes,
day.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Yep. So we wanted to have Dan on. He's been on the show before. Always awesome topics to talk about. Before we get into all of that today, obviously, if you've watched the show before, you know we're going to plug the Discord every single time. If you want to connect with us, if you have any questions, if you want to talk with other people that do the same kind of crap that you have to do before every Sunday, every week, that's the place to do it. You can find us at discord.bok.ber. Also, if you're looking for someone to do some of that crap for you, you can connect with us, the production company of Black Bar, at blk.bar. We've got a couple of topics that we're really excited to get into today. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about how to know when it's time to upgrade your gear and why your pastor always seems to disagree with you. We're going to talk about how to use media itself to evangelize, not just advertise your church. And then we're going to get into some of your questions we've been collecting about the week. But if you have any additional questions on top of that, feel free to throw them in the chat and we will answer them. If they're relevant and interesting. We've gotten some irrelevant questions recently as well. So we're going to ignore those for the most part. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, Caleb.
I'm great, man. It's great to be here on the pod, hanging out with you guys. It's awesome.
Yeah.
We're always glad Nick, to have why don't you.
Nick, why don't you take us into our first topic?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to be talking about how to know when it's time to upgrade and why your pastor is going to disagree, which I know we had a lot of fun dreaming up that title for this segment just because it feels fairly appropriate for some of the experiences we've seen our audience and our community express. In fact, I want to let them know we had a poll on our Instagram yesterday where we asked our Instagram audience, does it feel that your church budget is currently meeting your media needs? And the overwhelming answer was no. 83% of the individuals that answered said that their current church budget is not meeting their media needs. So
that's quite yeah. Now, Dan, you have been on, to my understanding, both sides of this discussion now, as both mm-hmm. a media yes. guy wanting to get stuff approved and as the guy who does the approving. So I think you have a unique handful of perspectives you can bring to this topic on why this breakdown in communication and priority maybe usually happens.
Yeah, this is a tricky one, guys. I mean, and I'm probably going to say some things that our media guys aren't going to like, but I'm hoping that I can say some things that you will like.
Sure.
Because look... ultimately, there can be a rift between the way that you view your church media and the way that your pastor views your church media, and why your pastor is always looking at the big picture, and I'm not saying you're not part of the big picture, but what you're doing is not the big picture. But I think we're all, because we're in tech, we are all in positions where we need to upgrade at some point or another, right? And so some of the reasons why we need to upgrade, you know, number one, when your gear no longer serves the vision of what you're trying to do, and that could be in any capacity. So if you're looking to upgrade from PTZ cameras to manned cameras because the vision is that you get more people involved in ministry, right? That would be a reason to upgrade. Where we're at here at Connection Church, we are a fast-growing church, and so what we're running into is we're running out of capabilities and we're running out of capacity, right? So there are things that we want to be able to do with some of our gear that we can't because it doesn't have the capability, or as in a recent audio upgrade, we've simply run out of capacity. We can't plug in another channel or have another output without unplugging something because we've just outgrown it. And then probably the reason why we mainly run into an upgrade situation is whatever we're using simply doesn't function anymore. And these are the situations probably 83% of the Black Bar community would agree with. Like, it just doesn't function anymore. I just need a new whatever it is.
Right.
Especially coming out of COVID, right? We're now 4 years out of COVID. A lot of the gear that we acquired to just get something out there is probably still in use. And probably aging out or starting to fail, right, guys?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember doing a lot of that emergency content right when the pandemic started off, and the gear recommendations that we were making were not gear recommendations based off of this is going to be great for 10 years. Mm-hmm. It was based off of you need to go live this week, and you're picking from what's available. So it'd be totally understandable if, you know, now nearly half a decade beyond it. I mean, half a decade for any piece of technology is usually a healthy lifespan.
Definitely.
So assuming that it's going to need upgrade or replacement at the very least by this time, is I think it's pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I think that we get into the situation of as tech people, especially tech people that are paying attention to what's happening in the world and how really quickly things change, how quickly new technologies emerge and become part of, you know, other people's everyday flow. Reasons why we shouldn't upgrade are when something feels old, right? When something else new has come out. And I don't know about in your situations that you guys have been in, but I always try to purchase right the first time.
Yeah.
And which usually means an increased budget initially, but it also frequently means that it lasts longer than I care to keep it around.
Right. Absolutely.
Sure. Right? And so we end up in a situation where we feel like it's been around for 5 years. It's been around for 6 years. We feel like it's time to upgrade, but the reality is if we replace or upgrade to something else, to the everyday person, including your pastor, there's going to be little to no perceptible difference.
Right.
And so why in the world did we pay that money to upgrade that thing that wasn't broken initially?
Yeah. I think specifically, you know, obviously Nick and I worked together at Grand Rapids First for a number of years. And then now we have broken off and we're doing Black Bar as a business. And it is amazing how instantaneously I know my perspective changed on when is it time to upgrade gear, when all of a sudden, like, now we're talking about an investment. And if I don't receive that investment back, like, we were shooting on A7Ss for years and years and years at Grand Rapids First, way longer than any lifespan that they deserve.
Yes.
And we needed to upgrade that gear, and it made a lot of sense. But now, okay, going from an A7 III to a Blackmagic 6K, am I going to be able to get $2,000 worth of that value out over the course of that lifespan of that camera? Now, all of a sudden, that's That's mm-hmm. a totally different part of the equation that was never really there. And obviously for a church, it's not quite the same in that, like, we're not talking about dollars coming back necessarily. I mean, tithe is a thing, but typically we don't see a one-to-one translation on that kind of thing. We're talking about the, like you said, like the mission, the vision of the church and like mm-hmm. impact on individuals, whether that be the people sitting in the congregation, the people outside of your congregation, or sometimes, you know, impact on, like you were mm-hmm. mentioning, the volunteers in that are actually using that and expanding that or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, it is often, I know we have it written down in here, mm-hmm. the how do you avoid gas being gear acquisition syndrome. Mm-hmm. We're also just nerds who like new stuff, right?
Right,
yes.
Right.
It's understandable.
Mm-hmm. It's the struggle, right, of the tech person. Because, like, we see the immediate and the important need, even if it's not going to translate to, you know, the conversion, so to speak, for the church, right? If you're upgrading from HD to 4K, you know, us who know, like, oh, well, I could, like, take a 4K image and shrink it down to HD, and that helps with certain things like reducing noise and increasing sharpness and stuff like that in the image. But I feel like one of our issues is translating that to our lead teams and to our pastors. And so we end up, you know, looking for that gear acquisition syndrome, gas, where we love all these different things, but we can't translate that to our pastoral teams or to the people that hold the reins on the budget.
Yeah, that's so true. And I would say that gear acquisition syndrome is more of in the camp of those of us out there who pay attention to and desire the newest thing, right? Like, I have a drone. I bought it at the absolute worst time. It's a Phantom sure. 2. It's a Phantom 2, yep, like the yep, white yep. one. Yep. No FPV. It's no. I call it my grandma drone because
sure.
It is at this point. Yeah.
It's the price of bleeding edge. You're mm-hmm. always, it's yeah. the same people who are buying the Apple Vision Pro right now. Mm-hmm. In 4 years, that thing is going to be a paperweight.
Right.
But you get it now.
And so I look at drones and I'm like, oh my goodness, I've got this grandma drone that you know, is difficult to fly, and I'm hanging a GoPro Hero 3 on the bottom of it, you know?
Yep.
And I could buy, you know, back in, you know, a few years ago, it was the Spark, and now it's the, you know, the Mini Pro 4 and all that kind of stuff. Like, I could get back into that world and spend it, but the reality is what I have for what I'm realistically actually doing, not what I could do if I had it, but what I actually in practice do, grandma's okay. Grandma's getting one shot of our fall festival once a year, you know?
Right. Dan, I had the same exact drone, so I know exactly where you're coming from.
I remember the drone.
We're gonna start a support group.
And what you're talking about, if you just need a shot from an aerial view, that's all you're doing. That's all you need it for. So yeah, trying to get like a Mavic or an Inspire 2 or something like that. Right. It's too much.
Right. One thing that I said I was going to say, something that people don't like, one thing that I would say, like, how to avoid gas is don't shop if you're not buying.
Okay.
I know goes against the grain of the way that people like us are built.
Sure.
But the reality is kind of that envy, that desire, and I don't want to make it a moral thing, but don't shop. So I would say the second part to that is buy right the first time. And this is something in collaboration with your pastor, with your elder team, your board, whatever it is. If you can buy right the first time, you're not going to want to look around for the next thing because you have exactly what works and what serves your vision.
Yeah. Mm. I know we got to a point early with Black Bar doing a lot of video content where we were filling up hard drives really fast. And Nick can probably show you a pile that's probably within 15 feet of him of random hard drives that are all just stacked on top of each other of the early projects of Black Bar, right?
I think we counted up. We have like 56 terabytes of the work from the past which is 4 hours.
So. Yeah, and we got to a point where it was like, okay, we can buy just another drive. And, you know, we back it up to another drive that's also sitting in there. Or we can spend twice as much money right now and invest in a server that then we can just slot in hard drives afterwards. Right. And then we can do it in RAID and we can back it up to the cloud and blah, 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 blah. And we did that. We pulled it and it hurt back in the beginning. Yeah. You know, that was an additional investment that we made. But it hurt once. And now we only have to buy internal server drives every time we upgrade, right? It's now literally cheaper in the long run because we made that investment up at the beginning. It's the communication to leadership. Though it's one thing if Black Bar, we're an internal company, we can make our own decisions. I don't have to explain to Nick the technical advantage of doing something like that when we make that decision. It's another thing, though, when we're talking to an executive pastor, and you know, I imagine most media guys that are listening to this would love to have an executive pastor like you, Dan, who understands what 1920 by 1080 versus 4K is. But often they're communicating with someone who has no idea what these numbers, these acronyms, whatever mean. In your experience, what is the most effective way to communicate sometimes the more obtuse technical advantage of gear that is needed and probably expensive to a pastor that doesn't understand this world at all?
Yeah, I'd like to tell you two stories of my own doing, right? Because I don't ultimately make, especially in large scale things, I don't make all the budgetary decisions, though I am part of the elder team that does make those decisions. It's not my choice. So in the last year, or year and a half, I've done two major presentations for one for a $60,000 LED wall project and one for a $35,000 audio upgrade. So inside of a year, I proposed $100,000 in unbudgeted capital expenditures to our elder team.
Yep.
One went quite well. One went very poorly.
Okay.
All right.
So that's why I want to share these things. So when I presented the LED wall project, which to me, our worship center is built for an LED wall. It makes perfect sense. There's a spot for it. We've been primed for it for a long time. So for me, it's like, this is the next thing that we do. Of course, it's going to enhance our worship environment. So I started with the what, not the why. That was my that was my issue. I started with the what, not the why. I started with vital stats. My presentation literally started with the LED wall is going to be 18.5 feet by 9.5 feet. And it's going to go right here. Now, one thing that I did, I think I did right, was I acknowledged that this was not a need. Right. So I didn't come out there with some kind of things like, oh, it's going to, you know, this many more people are going to get saved and it's going to enhance engagement in worship 22%. Like, everyone knows that's not true. So I acknowledged right off the bat, like, this is not something that we must do, though I do believe that it's going to enhance the worship environment. And the why ultimately was important, but I didn't lead with it. And that entered us into a 6-month discussion that, because I started with technical, the conversation was technical. Where should the money come from? Should we do it now? What are people going to say if all of a sudden we have a brand new LED wall? You know, spoiler alert, nobody even noticed. and so ultimately we did get it, and we've had it for 1 year, but it was a 6-month conversation that I thought everyone would see the way that I did. Hardly anybody did, including the most technical person in the room said, nah, I don't know if we actually need that.
Wow.
Thank you. Thank you, dear friend. Then about right about the same time, so maybe 6 months ago, I presented an audio upgrade situation that would be about $35,000. And my presentation, I basically said, I started out with the why. Here's what's going on. We can't include any additional people on our worship team because we don't have the IEMs. We don't even have the channels for output. So we're out of capacity. We're out of capabilities. We have pushed our Allen and Heath GLD80, which was at end of life on the day we installed it. Not bitter. And the other thing was, and actually the thing that moved the needle was, I said, you know, I come in at 5:30 on Sunday mornings and turn on the system, and on my way to church, I am rehearsing in my mind, what will I do if that board doesn't turn on today? You know, kind of like that doomsday scenario. And I didn't say it for anybody to feel bad for me, but it's just like, that's literally what I do. I'm waiting for the white screen of death. I'm waiting for it not to power on. And I'm telling you guys, inside of that meeting, I had approval to to purchase the upgrade.
I love that, especially the way that you started, like the why rather than the what. And even more so, like what you're talking about is creating those really concrete ideas in the minds of people. Like you could say the why is so that we could have better worship, right?
Right.
But you're presenting it as like, we literally cannot cross certain boundaries that we want to do to be able to grow because of what we're limited with the current state of the audio equipment.
Yeah.
And I mean, like the fear of, I know that, like you said, this is not what you did, but like the fear of someone going, oh my gosh, so you're telling me that like our service could just stop because the gear we're currently using is to the point where it's a question, will it continue to work? Like those types of ways of presenting those things are so much better than just the idea of like, this would be really great to have, or, you know, 12% more hands will be raised during worship or something like that.
Well, Nick, I could have started with the what. I could have said, oh, we're going to be able to run auto-tune, because we went from a GLD80 situation to a Waves LV1 setup. Actually, went from to three LV1 setups. So we have one for broadcast, one for monitors, one for front of house.
Awesome.
So we're going to be able to have studio-grade plugins and enhanced audio. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. But when we did do the install, they they instantly heard, even people who aren't technical instantly heard an increase in the quality, and it was like on our configuration Sunday we were barely there, and it was already so much better.
It's like I think something someone once told me about you. You don't sell the steak, you got to sell the sizzle.
That's it, baby.
I think you need to, instead of hoping that your leadership makes the effort to sort of like understand your language, you need to speak their language and how it affects the things that are important to the greater church overall, talking about whatever the problem that you're solving with this technology or the new product or whatever it is that you're trying to implement that is alongside the vision of the church. I know even my very first year at Grand Rapids First, I wrote my first proposal for new technology was buying those A7Ss that I mentioned earlier, a fleet of them. And I wrote a 4-page proposal. And I formatted it in InDesign, and I had photo examples. And I literally remember explaining, like ISO, so I can explain the low light performance of this camera to my senior pastor. And did it get approved? Yes. Was I made fun of for the next several years for the
yes.
Please never give us a proposal like that ever again? Yes, I absolutely was. But I also compare that to, there was a number of years later, I think it was in 2017, 2018, I wanted to centralize communication throughout the church that was being done in a variety of different ways, primarily through the church bulletin, who I have, it is no secret to longtime listeners of this channel that I am on a full crusade against church bulletins, and I hate them so much. And I wanted to move all communication digital. I wanted to consolidate to an app. And I explained the purpose of the app and what it would allow us to do and everything back in 2017, 2018 or whatever. And the executive leadership team loved it. And they thought it was a great idea. Mm-hmm. And there was a capital campaign going on time at an additional thing. There were other things moving at the church at the time, and the church as a whole was already receiving a lot of communication. There was a lot of change happening already, and it wasn't the right time for it, right? They agreed with the thing, but we also as media people need to remember that our senior leadership, mm-hmm. media is like a tiny slice of the pie of everything else that is going on. And it's not always a budget thing. Sometimes it's a vision thing. Sometimes it's a timing thing. And the reality of that's...
I am so glad you brought that up, because timing... here's the reality. Like, stopping your past... Like you've been thinking about it for months, right? And you're like, okay, all right, I'm gonna mention to him we need to upgrade to an X32. Right.
Yep.
And he's walking by the booth on a Sunday morning and you're like, oh, hey, pastor, so glad you're here. Thanks so much for stopping by. I put together this binder to show you that we need to get this X32. Mm-hmm, and like, bad idea. FYI, if you're planning that bombardment for this Sunday, don't do it.
Don't do it.
but your pastor and your board or your elder team, they are thinking annually, not weekly when it comes to expenditures. So your timing, mm-hmm. it's not just timing in the day or timing in the week. It's like, if you're thinking maybe there's going to be something that you're going to need to do, and this stinks, especially in the world of technology, you need to plant the seeds mm-hmm. in August or September for the following year. Like, you have to start planting the seeds in the summertime, early fall, and then don't expect anything to happen until March, April.
Right. Mm. Yeah. The with that proposal that I gave in 2017, 2018 that didn't end up going through, I ended up hearing back from my executive leadership team in mid to late 2019 and heard back that we remember this sort of thing that you had going. Is this still something that we can do? Would you do the same thing? Blah, blah, blah. All these questions started coming up. And we ended up making a couple changes to it. And all of a sudden, it was the right time, right? And not only were they excited about it, now this written proposal, that's how we did it back at Grand Rapids First. Now, I took that proposal and I presented it to the board personally and explained it. And they were, all of them were super excited about it. Then I went and they had me present it to the entire staff of like 80 or so people. Of like the advantages of this whole thing, because switching, centralizing communication is not just an executive decision. Everybody has to be on board, do it intentionally. And we ended up flipping over to it in December of 2019, moving all of our communications to entirely digital. And then 4 months later, if we were still communicating primarily through a paper bulletin every Sunday, we would have lost all connection mm-hmm. with our congregation when everything went online. It was God's timing. I have no other explanation for that, you know, mm-hmm. and fortunately the church leadership was listening mm-hmm. for that and knew exactly. Sometimes it's not your church leadership mm-hmm. making the decision. It's God saying, hold, wait, mm-hmm. and it's time to go. Right. And that's exactly what that was at that moment. I joked often back in Grand Rapids First that I was not the media marketing director. I was the media marketing advisor, right? And that the decisions that had to be made were made not only by my senior pastor, but by God, who is directing us. And all I can do is give him the best information to make the decisions there. Mm-hmm. So it certainly can feel like an uphill battle when you're pitching new technology, mm-hmm. especially if you're trying to pitch a new technology all the time, or if you're doing mm-hmm. it the wrong time, if you're doing it the wrong way. But making sure that you're talking about, whenever you're thinking about tech, think about it in the mm-hmm. context of the vision of the church and what the church mm-hmm. is trying to do first before you start talking about anything technical. That's usually a good place to start.
Yeah, Dana, back to the point you made about kind of like sowing seeds, so to speak, that will eventually grow into hopefully a budget. as someone who has now been on both sides of that, that presenting and also hearing other people's presentations, how do you think you'd go about, sowing those initial seeds, before you had a real presentation? Or is it like you do something like Caleb did, where in 2017, he had a full on proposal for an app and then just kind of like redid it a few years later? Curious how you might tackle something like that.
Yeah, I think I might approach it a couple different ways. I think bringing your leadership into your world a little bit to let them know some of the pain points as they're happening, mm-hmm. not connected to an ask, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes your pastor doesn't know that it takes you 3 hours to upload an audio only podcast because you're on dial up. Obviously, sure. making that up, but like your pastor doesn't necessarily know that. He doesn't necessarily know the pain points, especially if you deliver, right? If you're doing something that does meet the standards of what the church is looking for, he doesn't necessarily know the stuff that you're having to do. He doesn't know that you have to restart your board 6 times before service in hopes that it's going to make it, you know, to the end. He doesn't know how much time you have to spend getting your lighting absolutely perfect because your camera sensor is absolutely unforgiving in hot spots. You know, and ultimately, I do think it's about compromise. I think gear acquisition, and this might be another thing that I'm going to say that is controversial.
Let's do it.
But I believe that buying gear is always about compromise. I rarely buy the thing that I think is best because I'm always having, and best, like it may be in air quotes, I'm rarely buying the top end thing because I'm always making a compromise on capabilities, quality, and budget. And maybe the other thing that I'll come back to that, but the other thing I would do differently is maybe I would approach it like, instead of saying I want a fleet of these, I might say, hey, could we try out one of these and see if it's the right thing? And rather than it being a $12,000 question, it's a $2,000 question. And the pastor, seeing the alternative, might be more willing to say yes.
Yes.
I hear that.
That's something we really haven't talked much about, pitching the good, better, best sort of idea of like coming with the problem first and presenting a fleet of varying ranges of budget and investment, whether that's money or otherwise, to your pastor, and allowing them to make an informed decision. And then it's then your job to explain. Do not give them the job of understanding the advantages or disadvantage of those three. I've seen that done as well. You have to explain, you know, the pros and cons of these, but that also allows them an amount of freedom when we're talking about that giant pie of budget, of whether that be money, whether it be time, focus, or whatever. They now have more flexibility of how to fit your solutions into the pie. And in my experience, you have way better chance of actually, you know, getting into the pie as opposed to being pushed off to next year.
Right.
There's a lot of analogies here. Pies and gardens and stuff.
I'm getting apparently hungry. I didn't realize it.
It is lunchtime here in the Eastern Standard time zone. So
yes. Why don't we? We could probably talk for 4 hours on this topic, because I know we've all had plenty of experience. I know the amount of times Nick has pitched gear to me, even back when we were at Grand Rapids first. There's probably some fun conversations to have. But we only have so much time today, so I want to get on to our second topic, which is the title of today's episode, which is talking about how to use media in general to evangelize, not just advertise. I remember talking about college way, way, way back in the day, being a part of a ministry who shall remain nameless, that was an arts ministry. It was a bunch of students hanging out, and they were doing Quiet, Dan.
They're doing a lot of stuff related to art.
It was arts ministry. It was did a lot of music, did a lot of visual art and whatnot, and all these different backgrounds and whatnot came together. And eventually we had a conversation with the leader of that ministry, and it was, we want to start including digital media in this conversation. Like, what can we create? And the answer, almost word for word, that we got back was that media was a tool to advertise ministry, to get them into the room. It is not a tool for ministering to them once they get there, right? And we were dumb, angry college students at the time, and we were just angry and didn't communicate that properly and didn't handle it as well. But it led us onto a journey of what is now longer than a decade of trying to answer that question of, can media itself be a ministry? What does that look like? Is only have one picture? Can it be, you know, executed in multiple forms? Can media be used as an evangelism tool, as a discipleship tool, as an every step of the journey? Is this possible? Can it be more than just a billboard to get people into your church, maybe, where your pastor really does the ministry once they get in there, right? I believe with every part of my being, the answer to that is yes. And Black Bar is sort of the extension of that. But I know, Dan, you were there for very early on in the conversations when we were still angry college kids trying to find an answer to that question. Mm-hmm. And I would have to imagine that you might have a relatively similar answer to that question as we do.
I left my job as a professor of the University of Valley Forge to become a missionary at a media organization for this very premise.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. Now, it's not easy, and I don't think it's being done well everywhere. But in some of that experience, I have interacted with people who are in fact doing that. I was reminiscing this morning about a trip that I took into Western Europe, and I sat with a gentleman who's a pastor of a Kurdish church, right? Kurdistan being more of a people group than a geopolitical entity, you know, exists in multiple countries, and it's a people group. His church has 40,000 people.
Wow. Holy cow.
All meeting on Telegram.
Wow.
Oh. Okay.
That's incredible.
No physical site. No actual church itself. He did have a congregation there in that city. But largely his reach is all online.
No.
I had someone else telling me last week, who's lives and ministers in a Middle Eastern country, who said that every Christian he meets, this is going to be shocking to you, is from Iran. And he kind of said it of course they're from Iran, right? By the way, Kurdistan is part of Iran. Like, people are being reached through media all the time. Much of the work that's being done in Muslim majority countries is from people Googling, who is the man in white that I saw in my dream last night?
Wow.
And that's so organizations are running Google AdWords campaigns, and they're doing something that's called From Media to Movements. And part of the brilliance of From Media to Movements is it's actually shortening the time it takes to plant a church from about 10 years to about 2 years. Like, it's literally shaving entire missionary terms off of the time it takes to plant churches by using media to identify people of peace who the Holy Spirit is going before them and working on them. It's using technology to identify these people and put them in communication with real people who are on the ground and who are able to meet them and answer their questions and get into discipleship with them. Guys, this is happening right now. This is the most cutting edge thing that I know about. Yeah. And it's happening
right now. That's incredible. You said that's media to movement?
Yeah, the philosophy is from media to movements, and there are organizations that specialize in this. People that I'm in network with, and I'm being cagey, and I'm not using actual names for because I don't
sure.
want to name anybody.
Understood.
But there are organizations that specialize in this, and honestly, they do it for-profit organizations as well. Audience segmentation, you know, identifying potential customer bases, but they're doing it on the nonprofit end as well, using the same exact tools. And yeah, it's from media, right? You're creating videos, you're creating drip campaigns, you're creating web flows, you're using maybe AI to interact with people and follow them through until the point where you're sure that this isn't a setup.
Right.
And then you're moving them into relationship with someone in their neighborhood.
That's I very keenly remember the very first video that we uploaded to Black Bar of how to make church ads that don't suck was the name of the ad. And the literal very first comment that we received on this YouTube channel, which I believe is still there, was talking about how church marketing and church advertising is that's not a thing that the church should be doing. That's a thing that businesses should be doing. And that our job is to evangelize. It's to, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he ended this whole rant, this paragraph with, it always starts with attract. To which do you know what that is? In every other part of you know, media world, that's just another form of media, right? That's all it is.
You're absolutely right.
It's it's just we're it's a different, it's a generational thing, and I recognize that. And I don't hold anything against the individual that posted that, but churches have been using media since the printing press, since before then, right? To evangelize, to communicate the gospel to people who haven't heard it. We just now have more tools than have ever been presented, and we are very much behind the eight ball on what is possible with these tools. And I think personally, I know from my own personal experience and from talking from other people through Black Bar, is that, you know, I recognize even back at Grand Rapids First that of the potential of the ministry, the evangelistic potential of media in general. And there were so many ideas and things that I wanted to do, but also video announcements needed to be recorded, right? Mm-hmm. And also, I needed to design the sermon slides. And also, there was the next church bulletin, probably, that I was mad at. I tried to put that together, right? There are a lot of things that in the church world are deemed relatively necessary and meet media needs, whether that's a person on staff doing that or as a volunteer. And most of the hours that churches spend on media production are spent on those types of things. So I'm curious from your perspective, Dan, how can, if someone is in at a church, either volunteer or on staff, interested in doing media that is more evangelistically focused, but also already has 40 hours taken up in the stuff they just got to do every week, how can you communicate this priority shift to leadership who, in my experience, especially, you know, the average pastor being, I think, now somewhere between 50 and 60 in America, who may not understand media as a ministry to the best of our efforts. How can we communicate the value add of shifting those priorities at the church?
I think we, as a big C church, get too caught up in promoting our brand to insiders, and we forget about the power of the Holy Spirit and how he pursues outsiders.
Yeah.
People are checking out your church online, and I can't find any studies, empirical studies about this, but anecdotally, people are checking out your church online before they come.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And part of the conversation, at least here, and I'm bringing up the pandemic twice, but coming out of the pandemic, we had conversations about, do we continue online church? Do we continue to broadcast our services? Our lead pastor is asking the question, if someone's attending only online, am I responsible for their soul?
Sure.
Like, that's a heavy question, guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think where we get it wrong in terms of using media evangelistically is those 40 hours are spent on one-offs, their one-off internal communication. The video announcements, the bulletin, the slide. Yep. And while they might bring someone to maybe into a discipleship environment or into something that ultimately will help them to grow in their faith, what are we doing to accurately portray what the Holy Spirit is doing in our community and invite people to be part of the community, right? Ultimately, like if I'm thinking about, media products, telling powerful stories of life change, like just doing one of those a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's evangelism.
Yeah.
Right.
Sharing testimony. That's absolutely. It's not even anything new. It's
no.
The Bible tells us to do that. We're just putting it on video now.
Correct. Like that's an easy thing, but also to be wise and to be honest about how we are portraying what God is doing among us. And I think there are churches, there's a wide middle of churches that are pretty accurately proclaiming what's happening on the inside through their online, right? It's from a production perspective, it's an average service, it's an average live stream. You kind of get a decent sense of what's happening inside. I think on the outside edges, there are churches that are spending a lot of time and resource and talent on being amazing online, and then you get there and it's dead. Or it's amazing online, and I didn't realize this was super traditional. We were talking about this earlier, Caleb, right? You can only lie to a consumer once.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yep.
On the other side, I think there are churches that are so alive spiritually, and the Lord is at work, and they have no idea how to share that with people or how to engage in their community.
Right.
So finding a way to be honest and to engage with your community, for us, we are using media in some ways to evangelize our community, but we're mainly doing it through advertising. Because,
sure. I understand. Yeah.
Because we are inviting people. We want everyone in our community, which is right in southeastern Pennsylvania at the intersection of Montgomery, Chester, and Berks County, we want everyone to know about our free summer fun camp for kids in pre-K all the way up to sixth grade. We want everyone to know about our fall festival where they come on our campus and we cook for them and we go over the top to give them an incredible experience. We don't preach. It's in the name of Jesus, but just come and let us show you the hospitality of Christ before we ask you to do something or come here. We want everyone to know about our free photos with Santa. Yep. We got Santa in our church. It's my dad. And and we want and guess what, guys? People, our neighbors four doors down came into our church for the first time at Photos with Santa. They have missed 1 week in 2024 coming to our services for the first time. The Lord is at work. What did we use for media? Well, we invited them through media. We used the media of a free photo with Santa. And here they are being presented with the gospel every week and being challenged to grow in their relationship with Christ.
That's awesome.
I love that.
It reminds me. I was having a conversation with somebody recently. We are undergoing in the background. Spoiler alert: we're doing a little refresh of the Black Bar brand and new website and everything coming soon. But we're also working over some language.
It's not a rebrand; it's refresh.
A refresh, right? Yeah. but I was having a conversation with someone, and I was talking about a client that we work with, and I have dozens, so no one's gonna. Can't guess it. It'll be fine. But I mentioned kind of just, I said it without really thinking at the time. I said, there are some clients that hire us because they want us to help them look good. And then there are some clients that hire us because they want us to help them be good at what they do.
Oh, right? That's good.
And this client that I was talking about was one of those clients. And it made me realize how many church media people are in general were hired because they want the church to look good and not intended to be a sort of a function of helping mm-hmm. the church be good at what it does, be a part of the ministry, of the vision, of whatever yeah. that is. And that's usually because the people making those hiring decisions didn't even know that that was a potential. They didn't know that was an option. Media ministry 5 years ago was a niche little tiny piece of the puzzle. 4 years ago, maybe less so. But there are, for the people who understand these tools and understand the potential, I know even we asked this question on Instagram of people who believed if media could be a ministry tool. And somebody said, like, well, the companies are doing it. They're making millions of dollars, you know, every day. And like, if they can do it to make me spend money, like to institute life change, like we can figure out how to do it too. But for the people who understand how this technology works and how these media works and how it can impact people, and you are creative with how to use those tools, it's so obvious how much potential there can be. But it is up to you to communicate that to your leadership of what is possible if we spend the hours, focus the hours into doing it, if we spend the money in focusing into doing it. I wonder if it'd be worth spending some of our time today talking about, and Dan, I know you've already listed a couple, of some of the options that are available, some examples that we've seen of media being used specifically in an evangelism context. So that as these media people are trying to come up with ideas, pitching ideas, we can give them some ideas to run with.
One thing that's important when it comes to presenting the gospel in any environment is to contextualize the gospel. Yeah. Right, we have to understand who our audience is so that we can contextualize the gospel accordingly. That doesn't mean we change the gospel, right?
No.
Jesus contextualized the gospel.
Yes.
Who was he talking to? Farmers and shepherds. What illustrations did he use to contextualize his message? Farms and sheep, right?
Yep. Yeah. All of the gospels themselves are written to different audiences and emphasize different parts of the story. That like literally the most biblical example we can come up with of contextualizing the message of Jesus for people.
Yeah. So I want to take it one step further when it comes to media is we also have to contextualize in order to be effective. We have to also contextualize by platform.
Yes.
Right.
Oh yeah,
for sure.
You've seen it. And it's not just churches, by the way. It's a lot of organizations, people included, trying to repurpose content without recontextualizing it.
Yes.
One thing in the study of different platforms, the word that I use that makes YouTube different from Instagram, different from TikTok, different from Twitter, the word that I like to use is conventions. Acceptable standards that are different by per platform. When you guys were in my video production class, we created jump cuts because we were editing for story, and we covered up those jump cuts with B-roll because it was unacceptable to see a jump cut.
Right.
2024
has changed quite a bit.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
So what is acceptable on different, even like I love the videos that end right before they should end. I don't know what that's called.
Yes.
But right at the, like that's a convention that is acceptable. And you know, the difference between could be the same message, but the difference between a YouTube instructional or like a brought to you by Curiosity Stream video versus that same content delivered in an Instagram reel. We can't just upload 60-second sermon clips and assume that they're all gonna hit. It's not contextualizing, it's not gonna work.
Yeah, yeah, that's no different to me. I mean, obviously, you went overseas. You were a missionary. You served in the media ministry at the time. And to my understanding, you being assemblies, you had to go through a number of months of training of learning the language and yep. learning the culture that was over there. So that, because if you just brought your English-American context of everything this is and just spat it out, you would not have a great time over there, right? You have that's to fact. Understand the mm-hmm. culture, the context, the conventions, like you were saying, mm-hmm. of the culture that you're trying to communicate with.
There's and a ministry.
Every platform absolutely has a different one.
There's a ministry that is doing this in the one of the best that I've ever seen. It's a ministry called On the Red Box, and it's literally an evangelistic ministry. They stand on a red box in the center of Madrid, and they proclaim the gospel. There might be someone playing a guitar, someone gets up and preaches, they do illustrated sermons, these kinds of things. They have started a media arm to what they're doing called On the Red Box Films, and they are creating media products for every province in Spain, contextualizing wow. the message of the gospel to each of those regions, to each of those
that's awesome.
Almost like counties mm-hmm. or states. At one of them, it moved me to tears. It's called Beaten, Golpeado, and it weaves the story of Jesus being beaten, and this is a region that grows a lot of olives, and it has these slow-moving kind of Ronin shots of olives being harvested and the trees being beaten wow. to help the olives to fall off the tree, and it weaves in this imagery of beating to get these olives to create, and they have to be pressed, they have to be crushed. Like, there's so much violence involved in extracting the most beautiful product from these olives, and the most violent thing that could have happened to Jesus so that we might have forgiveness of sins and eternal life. Multiply awesome. This by 50 for the 50 different areas. Guys, it's brilliant. And it's contextualizing the gospel using media and reaching people in a way like, oh, that's around the corner from my house. Oh,
right.
That's what my family has done forever.
Right. Yeah. I remember the very first year I attended SALT conference, which is a media, or it's a conference specifically for church marketing, media, nerds, communication, whatever. And Luke, the first, I went there with a bad attitude the first year because I knew everything. And what in the heck am I going to learn from church media nerds? Don't know what they're talking about. This was pre-Black Bar. And the first day I was there and Luke, McElroy preached, and he preached a sermon for church media nerds. And that was not something I had ever heard before, right? Mm-hmm. And that was my context. That was I witnessed sort of firsthand and experienced what having a hyper-contextualized message specifically for who I am as a person looks like. And it was transformative. Black Bar started like 3 months later, right? Wow. It was effective enough for that, right? I remember bringing this back to Grand Rapids first. We did a campaign shortly afterwards where we took, it was just like what you were talking about, testimonies of people in our church. One of them, if I remember correctly, was a single parent. Another one was sort of a young person who had gotten saved in church and everything. And we recorded these videos, so we got little sermon snippets or little snippets of the thing and whatnot. And we used them on Facebook and Instagram as advertisements, but then we targeted the ad to specifically show it to people from the same background stage of life who have that experience. The ad targeting, obviously, scary boogeyman, all these companies are selling information. Sure. Also that. But can also be used as an incredible tool for taking a super hyper contextualized message specifically for what the power of the gospel can do for a single mother and showing it specifically to single mothers, right? Like the potential, if we're creative enough, I know we've used the example 100 times of the left-handed truckers, of like the targeting tools that are available in online social media and Google and everything right now are so powerful. And if we can target down that specific group of people and then find a message that is effective with that specific group of people, it's incredible the power of that. I mean, that's what companies do when they're trying to like find new customers, whatever. They go after niches.
Yeah.
It has generally been the practice. And I think just by virtue of how churches have come to be, that we want to cast as a wide net of possible, because usually churches are limited. Their reach is limited geographically. So I don't want to find only, you know, single mothers in the area. I want to find everyone within 30 miles of me.
Yeah.
But the way that the internet works, everybody is within one click of you, right? So when you have this wide reach, how is it that you can find your geographical area? And that's by targeting down of either, whether that be background, like you were talking about before, stage of life, perhaps there's a particular issue that people are going through, a problem that they're having in their life. You can have a whole ministry dedicated to creating media content to find people who have been recently diagnosed with cancer. Yeah. Why not? Why can't you do something like that, right? But it's up to us as media people to dream up what that could be, figure out what the vision of the church is, and find the stories that can be told and targeted appropriately. There's so much potential here.
I wish you were more passionate about that, Caleb.
We've been talking about it for a minute, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To even go on top of that, obviously we've talked so much about the concept of the digital missionary on Black Bar. And sometimes, and I think we've said it multiple times, I believe that the movement is probably going to come from individuals before it's going to come from churches.
Yeah.
Individuals who discover the power of having an online platform, content creation being the price of attention online. You don't have to come out here swinging of like, I'm going to be, you know, I am putting it in your Instagram bio of digital missionary. Like, I am here solely to convert you to Christianity or whatever. You can just be a person who has a following that routinely talks about the power that or the effect of the gospel has had on your life, and sharing that whenever you can in between the things, and being the light of Jesus in your own world. You don't need a giant, you don't need a $3,000 camera to do that, right? You don't need a full crew to do that even necessarily. You need passion to do it, and you need to understand the context of whatever platform and community you're trying to reach. But there's just so much. When the church finally figures out how to do this, I have to believe that there is revival coming.
Yeah.
It's
well, I think really one of the challenges as a tech person is we are often the ones that know how to say it, but we don't know what to say. Or we aren't the ones with the message, we're aiding in the message. And because you know, as you were talking, I was thinking like, yeah, one of the ways that we do that, if we want to be part of the conversation, is we have to make ourselves part of the conversation. Like, the way that looks, at least in my world in early 2024, is the people that I pay attention to is whose story is first on my feed.
Yeah.
Right? Whether it's Instagram, Facebook, whatever, I'm not on TikTok, but whoever is first, that's who gets the, so what does that mean for someone who wants to be part of the conversation? It means showing up all day, every day.
Yeah.
And that maybe that's what it means for your church to show up. And it's not, nobody cares about your scripture images. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. No one cares about what you're making in Canva. It's, and no one cares about your social media calendar. Sorry. Again, I'm saying all these controversial things.
Yes.
I'm here for it. Here for it.
Nobody cares. But be first. If you want to be seen, make yourself part of the conversation. You know, be at the top of the feed. And increasingly, that means nobody's getting served your posts on your Facebook group or your Facebook page that you made. And you're like, oh, that's our digital hub of our church. It's not. I'm sorry. Because it's not being served. Not because it's not worthy, but it's just not being served. But get out there and get in front of people, share contextualized messages that reach people where they're at, start the conversation. And I think you get some eyeballs that way.
Yeah.
That's it for the audio-only version of this episode of the Black Bar Podcast. If you'd like to be part of the full live podcast, which includes our slightly more casual and often more chaotic Q&A blackout segment, then be sure to join us for our live bi-weekly episodes over on our YouTube channel. Otherwise, you can expect the podcast in this format the Monday following the live broadcasts. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to give us a rating and review on whatever podcast platform you're using so that you can help educate, encourage, and inspire a fellow creative. And finally, if you're ever in need of any support from community to consultation to content creation, visit our website, blk.bar, for a variety of resources. Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast, and we'll see you on the next one.